the Metro on 101.9 WDET. I'm Tia Graham with Robin Vincent, and we are reassessing our drinking habits to hopefully be a little healthier.
Maybe a little, Tia. And we're taking your calls. Maybe you drink less alcohol than you once did. Whatever you feel, we'd like to hear it. 313-577-1019. Joining us now is Dr. Mohammed Najib Al-Halik. He's a professor of oncology at Wayne State University. Dr. Al-Halik, welcome to the Metro.
Thank you so much.
So the Surgeon General issued a report that highlights how widespread alcohol consumption is in the U.S., and he explains how alcohol is a leading cause of preventable cancers. For many, this may be news, but as an oncologist, you've been seeing how harmful alcohol can be. When did scientific research really start to uncover the effects of alcohol and the links between alcohol and cancer?
I do treat mainly GI cancers. That's like colon cancer, rectal cancer, pancreatic cancer, liver cancer. So 90% of my patients have cancer caused by alcohol. So I, you know, see that every day. I see the effect on alcohol on their health every day. So it is a very close topic to me. So we learned about the cancer causing alcohol since the 1980s. We knew about that since then. However, years and years of research and observational trials and prospective trials have been performed over the past 30 years that confirmed to us that signal, and especially for those seven cancers that the Surgeon General highlighted, including, you know, the cancers I treat, the GI cancers, and, of course, the breast cancer, the most common cancer in the world. However, after a very large trial that was run between 1990 until 2016, imagine, all of this data has analyzed...
26 years?
2016. So,
or yes, 36?
Yes, from 1990
26,
until
okay.
2016. And then they published that, those results in 2018 at a very respected journal called The Lancet.
Yep.
This is that trial, or this is the prospective study that showed us the true risk or numbers, okay, of those seven cancers and how the alcohol played a significant role in causing those cancers.
I wonder if you could talk about the interactions that you have with your patients and what they tell you about the struggles of kicking alcohol, even if perhaps they're still really sick. I mean, you said 90% of the patients that you see have cancer caused by alcohol, and this is gastrointestinal cancers.
Yes. You'll be surprised. First, those 90% of the patients that the cancer they have is linked to alcohol, you'll be surprised to know they are not a heavy drinkers that people label the heavy drinking. They're just the usual daily drinker, you know, social drinkers. We call it a weekend, drinking. So it's not like, you know, how people think, they drink a lot. No, it's actually not. When I ask them, do you drink heavily? They say no. You know, a drink on two over the weekend, or maybe a drink every day. When I come back home after work, I'll have a beer every day. So this is the population that I see. So I do agree with the report of the general surgeon that it is really not like just like heavy drinkers. Even what we call a moderate drinker, okay, also has that increased risk of those cancers.
So we're talking about, and this aligns with the report,
correct,
that just that one drink per day is going to increase your risk for cancer, would you say, significantly?
It is significantly. Even one drink a day will increase your cancer risk significantly. And the data is very interesting. If you go over the data, you know, like 180,000 cases caused by just a drink a day, imagine. So that's really high. This is the global numbers of, you know, Europe and United States and Canada. It's not just us, of course. In United States here, we learned that 100,000 cases caused by cancer cases caused by the alcohol. And unfortunately, that year, 20,000 patients died from cancer caused by alcohol. So those are really huge numbers. And it's interesting if you think about also the numbers of life we're losing with this. So the statistics show that patients that die from cancer caused by alcohol, they die 15 years earlier than their projected age of death without having the alcohol causing cancer for them. And the statistics show that just in 1 year, you're losing 300,000 years of life for mm-hmm. just 1 year. So the number is big, guys. The number is really huge. And this is why, you know, the advisory doesn't come for a simple thing. It really comes when there is a pandemic, a big thing coming, right? You know, losing lives, you know, affecting lives. Even if you don't lose your life for cancer, it will change your life forever. Just having cancer, even if it's curable cancer, it will change your life forever.
I wonder if it matters what kind of alcohol you're drinking, if there are some that are more harmful than others.
It's all about, you know, the pure alcohol that's in the drink and the amount of that. So the standard drink that we call standard drink will have 14 grams of that pure alcohol. And that's a 5 fluid ounce of wine. That's a 12 ounce of beer. And about 1.5 fluid ounce of hard liquor. That's what a standard drink, when we say, you know, a drink per week or drink per day, that's the standard. So more than that, of course, you are, you know, increasing your risk of drinking. And it's interesting that the WHO, the World Health Organization, put a statement in December of 2022 saying that there is no really minimal amount of alcohol that's safe for your health.
Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that, yes. Seeing what I see every day in my practice, yes, I do. I do agree with that.
Let's go to the phones. Billy in Lathrop Village. How will the Surgeon General's warning against alcohol affect your drinking?
Well, it's affecting me in two ways. If I'm a beer consumer, which I am, as well as mixed drinks, I watch the content on the ingredients label. For well over three decades, they've been really using substandard material in alcohol. Perfect example, wheat that's being sprayed by Roundup. If you want pure beer, you have to go drink German beer because they adhere to the purity laws. And also the consumption, you have to limit your consumption. That's what I'm doing.
Dr. Hollick, does the quality of ingredients, would you say, affect cancer risk?
I'm not expert in that part. No, okay. I can tell you the second statement, I do agree with it, limiting the amount of alcohol, you know, minimizing the amount. That's what I would agree with, definitely. It will be, of course, a goal for us after this advisory to work on that, increase the, you know, the awareness. I was so surprised to see that the statistics show only 45% of the U.S. population are aware that that cancer is caused by alcohol. In contrast with asbestos, right. In contrast with tobacco, 90% of the population in the United States, they are convinced that asbestos and tobacco causes cancer, but only 45% are convinced that alcohol can cause cancer.
So there's a lot of public awareness campaigns that need to happen now. Billy, thank you so much for calling in. You're listening to The Metro on 101.9 WDET. I'm Robin Vincent.
And I'm Tia Graham. We're talking with Wayne State professor and oncologist Dr. Mohammed Al-Hollick about alcohol's impact on our health. Let us know your thoughts, too. Give us a call, 313-577-1019. And just listening to the things that you've been saying, Dr. Al-Hollick, there are so many different questions I have, especially when you're talking with your patients. So I'm wondering, especially when we see these connections, and we're going to get a little inside baseball here, but I want to know, like, how are you all finding that connection, that correlation between alcohol and the presentation of cancer cells? Are we seeing, in what ways are you linking those two?
It takes years for alcohol to cause cancer.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why people say, why now? Why now we know about this? If we learned about this link since 1980s and you wait that long to tell us that, you know, it's definitive now. Well, because it takes actually time for cancer to happen from after the alcohol, you know, repetitive injury and damage the DNA of the cells, the chronic inflammation that the alcohol will cause, that will cause what we call an oxidative reaction inside the tissue. And it takes 10 to 20 years of latency before we see that. So the remember I studied that I told you, the observational study that was started in 1990 until 2016 to conclude, right? They needed to all those years to observe all those patients' behavior of drinking, documenting that, and then seeing how many of those will develop cancer and put this documentation. It took that many years to develop the cancer. So as far as me every day, of course, I mean, when I see my patients, of course, first time I ask them, how is your habit of, you know, alcohol drinking? Because they ask me all the time when they come, why me? Why I get this cancer? And then I was like, okay, let's talk about that. Of course, there are genetic risks associated with cancer. Those are really no more than 5%. People think it's always genetic. It's always in my family. It's really not. There's genetic risk that you inherit. That's about 5-7% of the time. Maybe if we were generous, 10%. There is what I call, you know, a family risks, but not a inherited risk. Means you're living with your siblings and your mother and your father. You eat the same food, right? That has, you know, whatever additives and preservatives. This is what, if you're like today, I saw, unfortunately, only 42-year-old with esophageal cancer. Okay, this patient, of course, you know, a drinker. But what's sad is his brother just literally 2 months ago died from the same cancer, and his mom with him today. He's depressed. His mom is depressed. She's losing her second son to the same cancer. But my point is this really genetic inherited, or is it really the behavior that they shared, the food they ate, right? The alcohol consumption, the smoking. This is like that risk that I talk about. And again, I told you, most of my patients with those cancers, they are not a heavy, like you call them, a heavy drinkers that are having addiction, right? Those are the patients we think they're going to get the cancer. They're really not the majority of them that are in that scenario, that the addiction and, you know, going to the AAs and et cetera. No, it's not actually. It's the usual normal life kind of drinker.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier as well, when we get to the point that where we are now with an advisory and possible warning label, it's a pandemic level. We're at a right. pandemic level. So being at this level now to where we have to really put an effort to inform the public about what's going on with alcohol and its link to cancer. It is causing cancer. Can you talk about how we got to the pandemic level now to where we need to start to, because you talked a little bit about it as well with asbestos and tobacco, but we're here now. So let's talk about where we are.
Well, the numbers are concerning.
Yeah.
The numbers of cases that we see United States, you know, 100,000 per year of cancers caused by alcohol is a high number. You know, you're talking about preventable 100,000 cases that we actually should not see them if we control, right, the alcohol consumption in the United States, and 20,000 loss that every year we're having. It's just hard for the general public to understand those numbers unless you really like come to us and work with us and see those patients, see the life of those patients, how the life will change when you get that cancer. Like this mother I told you about, her, right? Well, with her son today. I mean, I'm trying to convince him to even like seek treatment. He's just depressed. He's feeling that, you know, it's my end and I'm not going to do treatment. My brother just died from the same thing. And I'm convincing him to start the treatment, you know, for this, the immunotherapy, maybe the radiation a little bit, maybe some chemo. I told him when you get stronger, but, you know, he's even too weak now to even do the treatment.
Yeah. And, you know, once again, this building on some of the things that we've been talking about, especially it being a pandemic and it really being this something that we 45% of Americans only 45% of Americans know. I was one of those folks who didn't know about the cancer causing the cancer that alcohol causes. So, you know, now that we know alcohol can be harmful to our liver as well and so many other places, can you briefly remind folks of any other health risks we should consider when we talk about alcohol?
Of course. I mean, the heart disease, heart failure, atrial fibrillation. That's an abnormal rhythm in the heart. Very common in the United States. I used to see it when I used to do my internal medicine training before the oncology. A lot of patients come to us with this abnormal rhythm where their heart, you know, they call it skip a beat, right? It's actually because your heart is too fast. We call this fibrillation. The heart will fibrillate. It's directly linked to the alcohol toxic effect. Heart disease, heart failure, diabetes, actually linked also to alcohol, and so many other things. Of course, metabolic disease, we talked about cirrhosis, right? The liver being damaged and scarred up from drinking alcohol. And I don't want people just to think this is like, okay, this has happened only, you know, if I'm, you know, drinking so heavily. No, you will be surprised. We have really high number of cirrhosis that's linked to the alcohol that people think it's not due to alcohol. It's due to what we call the NASH or the steatohepatitis, the fatty liver disease, right? Well, by itself is not usually, okay, by itself is not enough in a young patient to cause liver cirrhosis. So it's a combination of that fatty liver disease with the alcohol consumption that both of them damages that liver and causes the cirrhosis. And after the cirrhosis, of course, comes the liver cancer. Unfortunately, yeah.
Unfortunately. We're going to get back to the phones right now. We have Jeremiah. What do you make of the Surgeon General's warning about alcohol?
Well, yes. I'm 67 years old, and I've probably been drinking pretty much all my life on an occasional basis, more so when I was young. But I would like the doctor to address, you know, yes, we do understand the chemical effects that it has on the body. We've probably had that understanding for quite some time now in our society. But exactly, perhaps maybe he could address the psychological dependence on alcohol. You know, at one time I was a smoker, and I haven't touched a cigarette now in over 30 years. But the psychological effect was, you know, you have a cigarette when you get up in the morning with your coffee, you know, when you have a break at work, and or when you're sitting at the bar having a drink. And the difficulty for me was, how am I going to get along without that cigarette? It was kind of a psychological issue. When you go to social events, you know, it's kind of ingrained in our behavior to, you know, to have a drink, you know, and that's something that sometimes is more difficult to overcome than just physical abstinence, you know. So is there a relationship there with psychologically? We do understand the chemical aspects, but could he address that from that standpoint?
Jeremiah, thank you so much for calling us on the Metro this morning. And Dr. Al-Halik, what's your response there?
He's very correct. Thanks, Jeremiah, first, and congrats for, you know, quitting smoking. 35 years, you know, this is really amazing. I'm trying to make my brother quit smoking. he's in Dubai. I try hard with him, and he is the same thing exactly. He changed from the regular cigarettes to those whatever cigarettes that they put in a machine just to have that feeling of something, you know, as you say, in his fingers and, you know, seeing the smoke coming out of it.
Yeah.
Same thing. So same thing with alcohol. You are correct. You know, the psychological effect of having that drink in your hand, you know, every night on a social, you know, this needs a lot of work, of course, needs a lot of education, a lot of programs, you know, education and mental health. We have this, you know, social or cultural idea that if you're stressed out, you drink. If you're sad, you drink. You want to just ease it up, right? You know, you drink 1, 2, 3, 4 drinks until you knock out, you know, and then wake up the next morning, go to work. Okay, so this needs to change. Instead of doing that, seek help, right? We need, you know, to strengthen our mental health, you know, work with therapists, you know, try to overcome that aspect. Learn how to deal with it. Because drinking that night is not going to solve the problem, right? You'll just probably forget that night, and then it's going to come to you again the next weekend. Whatever stress in your life. But try to learn how to face it, learn how to solve it. Drinking, as I said, with the sports events. You know, this is a major problem we have in the country that we need to work on. It's a public health, you know, like it needs the Congress to work and give us some guidance with the public health, of course, you know, the NIH to address those and how we're going to deal with it. You know, some, you know, call for, you know, working on limiting the availability, the time of drinking, you know, work with the college kids, right? You know, this is when it starts usually. They come, we're now in an age of drinking, okay? So, you know, parties and heavy drinking and completely not controlled. during the college. So those are a lot of things that we need to work on, you know, culturally, socially, mental health. You know, it needs a lot of work, and it's collaborative work. And I'm glad, Jeremiah, you're bringing this up on the radio.
You know, you're listening to The Metro on 101.9 WDET. I'm Tia Graham.
And I'm Robin Vincent. We're talking to Wayne State professor and oncologist Dr. Mohammed Al-Halik about alcohol's impact on our health. And we're having this conversation because the Surgeon General wants to add a warning label to alcohol that it causes cancer. But Congress has to make that happen. Dr. Al-Halik, how effective do you think labeling like that could be?
It's part of the education that we need to have. I think it will be effective. I'm not saying it will be effective to, you know, significantly reduce the amount of alcohol drinking, because whoever gets the, you know, to drink that bottle, for example, will drink it. But reading this over and over, like how we did with cigarettes, in cigarettes it was very effective. People still smoke. Right. But when they smoke, they know, like my brother, he knows. He knows that he's exposing his risk, you know, his life to risk of cancer, lung cancer, heart disease, etc. Right. But that guilt is actually helping him to work on stopping, working on limiting as much possible. I want to quit. That guilt actually helps you at the end. The current label that is on the bottles of alcohol in the United States, that's mandated by the government, the label is very simple. It just says that, according to the general surgeon, women should not drink alcoholic beverages during pregnancy because of the possibility of causing birth defects. And then the second thing is the consumption of alcohol beverages will impair your ability to drive a car or operate machinery and may cause health problems. This needs to be, will cause cancer, okay? And causes cancer, something, and mention those cancers, to be affirmative. And the label needs to be more visible. It's not very visible in a lot of drinks. They are usually transparent. You know, people don't see it. So we need to work on that. Again, the 45% needs to go to 90%, and I'm sure with that, once we increase the awareness, people will start, that guilt will start to reducing the amount of drinking on a daily basis. I you know, the social drinkers also will reduce it. The daily drinkers will reduce it to a weekend. This is how it starts. It's a gradual. The same way, right? We reach to that point, we're going to have to take another probably 10 to 20 years to reach a point where how we reach now with the cigarettes.
So as the label stands now, if I'm reading it and thinking, well, I'm not pregnant and I won't be operating a motor vehicle, I guess this is okay for me right now. Do you think that if the labels were to mirror what we see on cigarette packs, let's say in 20 years, is it possible, do you envision a world where alcohol is in the same, has the same social stigma that cigarettes in America have?
If we work hard on it, yes, we will reach there. You know, now we cannot smoke everywhere, right? Like if someone wants to smoke, hard time to find an area to smoke. So that actually is helping, you know, not to go and buy just, you know, a 2-3 packs of cigarettes per day. You know, you're probably, like whoever's smoking now is having hard times, you know, smoking probably a pack a week if he's busy working and, you know, want to support his family, cannot really leave every time his work and go outside to the designated area of smoking. So, yes, label, you know, again, working on the social behavior, limiting the places where you can drink, time, you know, talking about the stadiums, right? Sports, you know, stadiums, that's a huge problem, right? That we just, you know, let everybody drink whatever you want there, all okay, and we don't think about later. All those young folks that go to the, you know, with their family, that, you know, that either they drink or they see, you know, their family drinking, then it's okay. Right? That culture builds in your mind that it's okay then, you know, to go and you know, drink heavily during the sports event. And between that, you know, daily drinking, then it's okay.
We have to find other ways to root on the Lions and the Pistons. Let's go back to the phones. Harry in Waterford, what are your thoughts on the Surgeon General's warning?
This is Harry from Westland.
If that's Westland. Hi. Sorry about that.
No, no worries. So I have a question. To me, there seems a little bit of a disconnect in what the doctor was saying. I would have assumed that people that were the heaviest drinkers would have the highest percentage of cancer, but the doctor seems to be saying that that's not the case, that it's moderate drinkers seems to be the majority, and I would think that I don't understand why it's not that way. I'm not saying that it's not toxic and those people aren't getting, but it would seem to me that if the more you drink, the more chances, the more dangerous it would be.
Harry, thank you for calling in, Dr. Al-Halik. I'll have you respond there and clarify for us.
So the higher the drinks per day, the higher the chance of cancer. I am telling you, like when you go to work in a clinic, okay, with all those cancer patients and you see what's the drinking behavior in those patients, because most of the people drink moderately. This is the population, the largest population that you have. Let's say United States as just an example here. The largest population are the moderate drinkers. So then this is where those cases are coming with cancer, right? That's the largest number of cases. Okay. No, but true, if all of those drink heavier, okay, than what they're drinking, we'll have way more cancer cases, of course, in the United States. But this is like this is the reality of like if you take a population in any country and you look at them, you will see that the outliers are the heavy drinkers and the other outliers are the social drinkers, the minimal drinkers. And in between, it's like a bill, right? In between are the moderate drinkers. So the largest population are the moderate drinkers. This is where most of the cases are coming from those. Okay. But if you look at, if you only take just the high drinkers only and see how many of them will get cancer, it will be high compared to the moderate drinkers. That's how like statistics, if you want to think about it and understand it. Okay. So, but definitely true. Like for example, here the, you know, the advisory also mentioned that the higher alcohol consumption increases breast cancer, for example, for women. If the woman drinks less than one drink per week, the possibility of having breast cancer is 11%. If the woman drinks one drink a day, and now we know what is a drink here in the United States, the risk is 13%. And if she drinks two drinks a day, 15%. So see, 11, 13, 15. So minimal drinker is 11% chance of breast cancer. That's why I say the WHO even, you know, stated that nothing cold is a safe minimal alcohol drinking for your health.
Dr. Al-Halik, I want to try and end on a positive note here, if possible. Mm-hmm. You treat patients who have cancers that often have low survival rates, and that is gastrointestinal cancers. So it sounds like we really need to focus on prevention here and that it's not too late mm-hmm. to really change your habits and to try and prevent yourself from developing cancer from drinking.
It's very correct. You'll be surprised that 90% of my patients that, you know, the alcohol caused their cancer, they actually quit after they learned about their diagnosis. Very small number of them will continue to drink despite, you know, the cancer. And when they really, like, usually have a social event, really, like, once a year, if anything, like a family gathering on a Thanksgiving, they really wanted me to approve for them that one drink of wine for that event to just socialize. And I usually say, yes, okay, of course. You know, they worked hard, of course, all this year, you know, to beat this cancer. But again, before that, let's prevent the cancer from happening. We don't want you to have the cancer and then you quit drinking, okay? We want to prevent those cancers, those 100,000 cases per year that we can prevent. We want to prevent them. We want to see this number coming down to zero if possible, which probably could be an impossible. But let's talk about like a minimal number of those, because we cannot eliminate completely, of course, you know, the cancer caused by alcohol if the alcohol is still available. But we want to minimize it so we don't see that many cancer cases.
I just want to add one more thing. This is Tia Graham jumping in really quickly. I just want to add other solutions as well. With cigarettes, we saw the, you know, moving the smoking area away from the buildings to help kind of reduce that. As well, we've seen cigarettes, the prices go up extremely. They were really, really high. My mom was a smoker as well. She stopped. She's been almost 10 years, I believe, my mom's quit smoking now. So I just think about the price increase and everything that helped curb folks away and get them away from smoking. What does that look like, in your opinion, for alcohol?
That's actually one of the voices that are coming now from the public health leaders, increasing the, as you say, the price tax more on the alcohol, increase the tax, you know, so people, like, this will increase the price without increasing the price, you know. Yeah, but you know, this will limit, of course, not everybody from doing it. I'm not saying we should really, that's the aim, because if you aim to prohibit, you know,
we know about prohibition.
We know what happened, right? Exactly. This is not the right way. The right way is do it in the right way. You know, that you as a person, you limit, because you understand there is a risk from that. And you limit the use, and if you use it, you know, like not too often, then just stop. Preserve your life. In 15 years, you're losing again if you get cancer from this.
Dr. Mohammed Najib Al-Halik is a professor of oncology at Wayne State University. Dr. Al-Halik, thank you so much for joining us on the Metro.
Thank you so much for having me.